Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Is being recorded.
Good evening. This is Onaji Muweed. You are listening to Race Treaty that comes to you every Friday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with the discussion about human potential, social welfare, economic welfare, well-being. And we particularly look at what is called ICERD, the International Convention to Eliminate Discrimination, which is really a soft or milder word to, in fact, understand and undo and reverse institutional racism. And we know that this country, the United States of America, was founded on the principle of, in fact, who was human and who was not, who would be the masters, who would be the slaves. And we see a continuation of the same thinking and practice. We're here to counteract those ideas, practices, and realities. And each week we have organizers, human rights activists who are, in fact, on the ground doing such work. Tonight we're going to continue a conversation we had where we introduce to this listening audience Norman Kirtland, who is the founder of the Center for Economic and Social Justice. And we're going to have join with us tonight someone he mentioned when he was on our program, and that is Mr. Leonard Walker, who is, I believe, the president of Descendants of American Slaves. And I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, and they will certainly give me correction if I'm stating the organization incorrectly. So I'd like to say welcome to Race Treaty, gentlemen, and please acknowledge that you, in fact, are on the air with me.
Yes, we are. I'm here. It's Norm Kirtland again. Leonard, are you on?
Yes, Leonard Walker. I am here. Can you guys hear me?
We sure can.
Yes, 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 we can. So, okay, I'll go to Norman first. Norman, when we spoke on this airways, before last week, you had talked about many things, certainly your background. You talked about the Third Way. You talked about Capital Homestead Act and many other things, but you also mentioned the work that you're doing with this gentleman and his organization. So could you please remind the listening audience of why you happened to bring this person's name into the conversation.
Well, I was brought into Louisville, Kentucky, and met with Michorn Daniels, who introduced me to, or he had me as a main speaker to about 100 people who are involved in the kinds of issues we were discussing on the program. And Michorn was the spirit, the original spirit of descendants of American slaves. He just said, we don't want to accept stuff on color or race, but we want to call ourselves something that nobody can protest, and that is, we are descendants. We're descendants of American slaves, but we believe in changing America. So that led to his organizing. And particularly getting Leonard Walker as his president, and they have people, I don't know what the number of members they have, but they have a good outreach. And I see that as more important than any other group to become the leaders and reach out to millennials and reach out to the young people and give them pride in coming up with a just solution for America, for all of the world. So that Leonard can take it from there and explain what he heard and any suggestions that he has.
So Leonard, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. And first, tell the listening audience, in fact, who are you, right? A little bit of background about yourself. And certainly go on to talk about your organization that you represent, and then some of the comments or observations that you had from the last show that you were gracious enough not to interrupt Norm because you wanted him to have the platform. But I'm very interested to hear some of your observations and comments from the first show. So one, please tell us a little bit about yourself. Two, about your organization. And three, your comments and observations on the last show that I interviewed Norm.
Thank you. My name is Leonard Walker. I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois. I currently live in Greensboro, North Carolina. I am a Gulf War veteran. I served in the military as a war veteran of the Desert Storm, Desert Shield, or Desert Shield, Desert Storm. By trade, I am a logistical manager. I move people's things from place to place for the automotive industry. That's what I do. That's what my trade is. I also have an aviation background from when I was in the military. I've got a warehousing, manufacturing background, logistics background. So I've kind of got a perfect storm of how to move things from place to place via truck, via plane, mostly via plane. How I got involved with Descendants of American Slaves, I was, following, I guess, the Black consciousness community, and met, there was a brother Michonne Daniels. I was talking to him, and he was telling me about these concepts, and I didn't grasp it at first. It took me some research to find out what was going on. I seen this brother, he just was hell bent on what this was about. So I did some more research and looked into it. There's a book by the name of America's Little Black Book by a man by the name of Mr. Norris Shelton. And that lays out pretty much the identity of American slaves and descendants of American slaves. So like I said, as I did more research and looked into the concepts of descendants of American slaves, what it is, what our organization is about, right, first and foremost, is we want to recognize and honor those Americans that America has forgotten, and that is our enslaved ancestors who, had it not been for their sacrifice and struggles, and unimaginable life that they endured, we would not be here today. What we feel is that we in the 21st century have rights and opportunities as American citizens, okay, that our ancestors did not have, okay? Yet and still, they managed somehow not to commit suicide or take their own lives or do whatever. All it would take is one of our enslaved ancestors to not be here, and that would radically change our lives. We might not even exist. So our organization wants to pay them homage and honor them, okay, by recognizing the fact that the America was denied to them. The America that we have, we are privy to, was denied to our ancestors, yet and still we are still here. So that being a point of pride, a point of motivation, we are obligated, okay, to fulfill, all right, or to live out our fullest potential based upon the fact that our ancestors did not have the opportunities we had. This is how we honor them, all right, because they continue to have children, even though we know that their children and families were separated, knowing that their children could be sold away, and in many cases, children were sold away. Continue to have children, continue to do things that human beings do. They loved, they had families, they had children, despite this nation treating them like property, commoditizing them, okay? So, and to honor, and this is something that we want to spread to our community, I think more so, our community has forgotten, hey, listen, you have a slave ancestor. They did not have the same, they could not be educated, could not, a lot of things that our enslaved ancestors could not do or were not allowed to do, we have the right to do today, and we need to take full advantage of that. This is part of doing this, as part of transforming our community. Right now, I don't have to go into the details, but we know right now we're a suffering, hurting community. We have to take ownership in, dealing with the issues that we have. I was speaking to a brother the other day, and the analogy we like to use is it's not our fault that we're in this box, okay? The box of being victimized by institutionalized racism. It's not our fault that we're in that box, but it is our obligation to get out of it because no one will get us out of it other than ourselves. This is what we want to do within our community. We're an upstart group. We're growing. We're looking for membership. A lot of things we got on the agenda. One of the things is, like I said, is economic justice, economic empowerment. We're looking at political empowerment as well. We want to restructure, redefine the way we engage in the political process. We've got some ideas about that. But more specifically, let's talk about the Just Third Way and what our involvement is. One of the things that you hear from many of our brothers and sisters who are brilliant, have great ideas, who want to start businesses, who may want to try to do some things, is we lack the capital funding, all right, to get things started. I hear this more and more, okay? The Just Third Way is part of a program that would allow us to have some of the capital that we would need just to get started to try to maybe create more businesses for ourselves or improve our existing businesses, expand them to where we can employ people, where we can transform our communities economically. What Dr. Curlin was saying, I think to simplify what he was basically saying is what the Just Third Way is if you take gross domestic product of the United States, all right, and divide that into per citizen, you'll come up with a number per citizen as far as dollars goes. Well, here's the good thing about that. And I think he mentioned $7,000. Well, $7,000 is maybe not a whole lot, a lot of people would say. Well, let's start out with $7,000, okay? And let's just say through that, $7,000 investment as you know, small businesses grow, more people are employed, our gross domestic product grows. When our gross domestic product starts to outgrow our population, that number will rise, okay? So it won't stay at just 7,000. It could go to 8, 9, 10, it could, you know, $20,000 a year, $50,000 a year that would be there to use as capital credit, not commercial credit, capital credit. And what's the difference? Capital credit is what we would use to, you know, build a business based upon being able to pay that back through like an investment, okay, a return on that investment, so that the monies would always be there. This is a great idea. Like I said, is we suffer from lack of capital. We have capital. A lot of people would say, well, we got the capital. We have the money in our community. Yeah, but we're kind of tight, all right, with our money. You know, like I said, you can use these. This could be used, like I said, any type of business, private education. You know, there are limitless possibilities, you know, but this is just a start of one of many things that we could possibly do in order to get what we want to accomplish done to transform our community and to transform our people, our culture. How does this work when we engage the entire America? Well, if we're at the bottom, okay, and we raise ourselves, okay, that's good for America as a whole. You imagine a city, okay, where you have no bad sides of the town, okay? Being from Chicago, living in Chicago culture for as long as I have, anybody that's listening from Chicago will understand what I'm talking about, the bad side of town or the bad neighborhood. Imagine if we could eliminate these bad neighborhoods, bad side, or at least reduce them, all right, to the point where young people who do everything right in life still have a chance to succeed within their own community. That's one of the things that we face within our community. I can tell you for a fact, growing up in a Chicago or Detroit or a St. Louis or New York or California or different places or Los Angeles, it's a great possibility within our community. You can do every single thing right, all right, go to school, do everything we've told that would lead to success, and still not have anything there waiting for us to build success, to build success with, all right? So this is one way in order to have some sort of, say, hey, listen, I have this now, I can take my great ideas and I can build upon them and I can, you know, enjoy the entrepreneurial spirit and the free enterprise system that America is all about. Okay. Some people may not want to do that. That's fine. But if more of us do that, okay, and more of us employ, you know, our people, we get more educated about this thing, then it's going to be better, and we can transform our community. So like I said, that's how that benefits us in that capacity. Like I said, with Dr. K, Dr. Kellen put out a whole lot of information. And like I said, that's the gist of it is you know, whether people want to believe this or not, America is about ownership. Okay, that's how this nation was built. All right, now of course they own people. All right, matter of fact, they own people because people at that time, our people, were value added commodities. Okay, well, that whole ownership thing has never stopped being a vital part of America, even though, you know, people are not owned outright per se. But, you know, so part of that ownership process, all right, having a piece of America, I'm a homeowner right now. So I have something that I can use as collateral. I can use to, hey, I can start a business. So, you know, that ownership, that's one of the problems we have within our community. We don't own enough things. We don't understand the concept, okay? It's something simple. It's something available to everyone, okay? And that's really what we really would like, to make sure it's available to everyone, the concept of owning. So owning stocks, wealth building, all of this kind of stuff is crucial to our economic survival. If we don't you know, as the people start getting economically into these types of arenas, we will be locked in box, all right, in a economic, you know, caste system where we'll completely be at the bottom with the concrete ceiling above us, and we'll never be able to break through. So, and that's what we want to avoid. Dr. Curlin talks about, you know, breaking down racial barriers, and we absolutely believe this as well. He spoke about how you don't believe in color. In fact, what we believe is when you look at the concepts of color, okay, I mean, you can look at someone who is quote-unquote an African-American, and they are at the same time be considered as a black person. And you look at them and you ask, well, what makes that person black? Obviously, it's not their skin color, because you can have somebody like Cory Booker, Senator Cory Booker, and somebody like Senator Tim Scott, who are completely different complexions, all right? Yet still, they're both black. In fact, Cory Booker is so light-complected, someone like George Lopez, all right, who is Hispanic, is actually darker complexion than he is. But yet he's not considered. So how could somebody be black and somebody be darker than black? See the confusion in color. Well, what we believe is that the color concept has nothing to do with your skin. It has, what it has to do with is your social status. All right. You are in America has a invisible caste system, an unspoken caste system. And that's one of the things we want to dismantle. Giving people economic opportunity helps dismantle that. You see a lot of tension, okay, that goes on between people, poor white people, poor black people, poor Latinos. It's like I said, it's the fear that happens all starts economically, because you have jobs leaving, you have, you know, all types of stuff. So like I said, it's with, you know, ownership, okay? You know, now you take something, okay, all right, you know, I can invest in myself. I can invest in building something for myself. Right? Even as Dr. Curlin said, it may not even be a tangible item, such as a business, you know, a restaurant. I could even take this and invest in shares of stock, okay, which will grow wealth as well. You see, so like I said, there are many ways in order to grow wealth as individuals, and that opportunity has to be afforded to every single individual, every single American in America, and that is not what has been happening. So this is where our partnership begins. And I'll turn it back over to you, Dr. Curlin.
Thank you very much. You know, I was honored to be invited to be a member of your board. Believe me, that's a great honor. And I expect to have Dotsie become members of the board of the Center for Economic and Social Justice. We had a great meeting earlier this week with Jim Montgomery, and I'm just wondering what you can remember from that meeting, because I think Jim is going to be very helpful. Hoping that he listened in on today's program. He's 90 years old now, but I think what did you get out of the meeting with Jim? Because I think that may be significant in terms of connecting up with a person who's done phenomenal things in trying to change cities and build housing, etc., both here and in Africa. And I'm just curious. I think it'd be interesting to the people here to hear what you think of the discussion we had with Jim, and what we're hoping that will occur in Philadelphia with Jim bringing in his people together with your people. Can you say something about that?
Yes, we met. We had a conversation with Mr. Jim Montgomery. First and foremost, Jim Montgomery is a barrier breaker. Okay, he's one of the first people to ever graduate from MIT as an engineer. He's a descendant of American slaves, is what we would say. But I'll use the terminology that's most common. He's an African American. Okay. So he's breaking barriers there. Joined the military, breaking barriers there. Actively involved. He's a Panther. He was in programs, actively involved in the civil rights movement, actively involved in world causes, in Africa, trying to make better situation globally, all right, for people of color. And I was completely blown away. The biggest thing is he's well connected, knows a lot of people, can get us connected with the right folks where we can go ahead and start growing this movement and start changing our culture. Like I said, 90 years old, somebody has to pick up the torch, okay? And that's we can't let all of that, the life, work and so we have to, somebody's got to pick this torch up, and we've got to, continue his legacy of servitude towards humanity, okay? Because like I said, it's humanity. Hundreds of interesting stories. Obviously a person who's 90 years old, has World War II veteran. You can't say enough. So like I said, that was very interesting exchange, and we look forward to actually meeting with him and getting to know a little bit more about him and making those connections so we can start to transform our communities. Like I said, one of the things that we're about, okay, is I think I speak for the voice of most people, is there are lots of organizations out there. There are lots of people doing a bunch of different things. But, what we want to see is results. We want to see things changing, all right, something being accomplished. All right, sometimes that takes time. I know we're a generation of people who want instant gratification. All right, that's the millennials. That right there, that may or may not happen. But, if we begin to invest in change and invest in progress and invest in empowerment, the changes and the progress and the results will come. So like I said, with all of the pieces of this complex puzzle, we're trying to piece together to fix our society. I think, we're on a good path to actually get some things done in a right way that will be beneficial. And, we like I said, changing our cultures is really huge. So,
those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to Race Treaty. I'm your host, Onaje Muwiri, and we have with us on the program tonight Norm Kirtland, who was on our previous program, and joining us tonight is Leonard Walker. And they are discussing how they met each other, the intentions of these two individuals in their respective organizations in terms of how they can continue to be cooperative in their working endeavors to make changes. And we would like to thank them both for spending this time with us. We're not ending now, but in another 4 minutes or so, we will be taking a station break. I just want to do a heads up as we approach that mark, and like to ask the gentlemen to both respond to, and we won't get them both in prior to the break, maybe one person first. I'll say Norm, what do you see in terms of the first step? And maybe you said it already in terms of you, the two organizations, becoming more intimate with each other in terms of being on each other's boards. I think you mentioned that. But in terms of getting some plans into action, what do you see as being the next step after the organizational connecting in the way that you mentioned?
Well, as I see it, there are a number of people who I've met in recent years. Many of the people that I was involved with are already passed away. But you, the fact that you're interested and you make it, you're allowing these ideas to be brought to this particular audience. I think that's tremendous contribution to a new movement. Okay, a movement that's going to commit itself to changing the system, not because you, instead of trying to change or pin point the finger at the rich or point the finger at the white supremacists. I think that when the white supremacists, if in fact we organize the descendants of American slaves and they bring a new system, that even the white supremacists will see, my God, you mean they're not doing this. See, but I think we need new leaders. We need people, and you can only lead if you're able to deal with principles, particularly justice. People, ultimately, everybody wants to be treated justly. Everybody wants to be free. Okay, everybody. They don't want others to dominate them. But we know that present system does have, and I blame it mainly on the money system, that I can teach people what the money system is so that they understand that the present money system can be, should be radically overhauled. One of the most important things, I would hope, that all members of SE, but all members in the audience, would take a look, go to the UN's website, just look up the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And in there, Article 17 says that everyone should have the right to own property, personally or in association with others. Now, no country in the world supports that right, including the United States, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So ultimately, the best we can do is make sure that human rights, particularly universal human rights, are actually implemented in the system. But nobody is fighting for that. And I say, who but the descendants of American slaves should try to make the right to own property, the right to a money system that supports that? You see, I understand that people cannot afford under current the monetary system to start new businesses.
We need to take a break right now. Okay, we're at the half-hour mark. Have to give at least 30 seconds for our station to make their station break, and then we'll be turning back in about another 30 seconds.
Right.
In 2008, the Black Talk Media Project launched the digital radio platform, Black Talk Radio Network, the first such platform created to serve the black community specifically. Black Talk Radio Network has grown with a variety of radio hosts, digital radio stations, and podcasters. Web analytics say Black Talk Radio, the platform, has an online reach that ranks it among the top independent black media platforms in the world. All of this is possible because of financial contributions to the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. If you love the work we do and the voices and perspectives we bring to you every day, make a donation today to ensure that Black Talk Radio is here in the future. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Hello everyone, this is O'Neill Jimmy Weed with Race Treaty. Welcome back to our show. We have two guests on tonight. Norm Kirtland, who was on our show previously, and we have joining us Leonard Walker, and they are sharing with us their histories in terms of meeting each other and the work they have done in terms of working with each other in respective organizations, and we're clarifying some of the concepts that they're building on. And the last, before we went on to this break, Norm was talking about human rights, particularly the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 17, that speaks to everyone having the right to own property and own land. And he was speaking to us about how he hopes to bring this into existence here. So, Norm, please pick up where you left off.
Okay. You know, it starts with where is the frustration in today's system most? What group, what citizens of America do we have that frustration most heavily? And I say they're the descendants of American slaves, also the Native Americans, same thing. But I think descendants of American slaves, given the population of descendants of American slaves, if they take this on and take the pride of being the new founders, let's call it the Second American Revolution, not a first revolution. This is a second American revolution, but this is the one that will provide equal justice, equal ownership, equal power to every citizen. And then you design your system to bring it about. And it's only a matter of people power, organized people power. And they take the pride. They're frustrated now. Sure, they are frustrated. Take that frustration and turn it around so that it can become a source of pride and not just for themselves. I think that's a mistake politically, just for themselves, but for everyone. And the program, the Capital Homestead, it is to provide money through local banks under the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. You don't even have to change that. In that is the power to create new money out of thin air, loans out of thin air, but it's backed by assets that have to be brought into being. So that 7,000 that I gave you was, I took what's called new capital formation, both in the private sector and in government for highways and so on. You need money for that, okay? So how could all of that, if you took the number, say it's a couple trillion a year, maybe 1-2 trillion a year in a slow growth environment, divide the population, it comes to $7,000. Again, it's slow growth because I want to be conservative when we use numbers. Okay, and if we're right, we're proving it with worker ownership through ESOPs. That's everything. That is, banks will create credit out of thin air, not out of past savings, out of thin air. So we don't need the rich to put up their money. No, it's future savings. You make credit. It's only promises. Every contract is money in the sense that people or barter is money. If everybody's expecting that there's equality on both sides, the seller and the buyer, they both think that it's equal. Money is not a commodity. It is a way. It's a yardstick for measuring economic values. You see, and that is something, it's a social thing. But the present money system is being designed to create more and more ownership in a tiny class of people. And that's why power gets corrupted and this tiny class can get the kind of laws they want. It's not the laws as they're now being proposed by both major parties and all the third party. As a matter of fact, Michonne is also involved in something called the Unite America Party. That's another one that people ought to look at. The platform of the Unite America Party, which you can get by going to uniteamericaparty.org. You can see what they're trying to do. And we're saying any of the parties can take these ideas. So it's all laid out. And any guy, I sent the same thing to the people in Zimbabwe. who are forming a new party. So these are things we got to begin to look. But I say that the ones who should be at the forefront of this, again, are the people who are most frustrated, and they ought to take that frustration. So that, how do we take pride? You take pride by bringing something not just for yourself, but for the world. And either these ideas make sense to anybody who studies them, and if they have any questions, again, I have never heard yet since I first heard of the ideas, I have not found anybody to be able to challenge it, to say what's wrong with it. And if you can't say what's wrong with it, I can say what's wrong with the present system. And I think everybody listening to the program knows that there are plenty of things that are wrong. But I don't see, and I don't call it just the third way, because Bill Clinton and Tony Blair talked about a third way a couple years ago. And their third way was political democracy and the capitalist system. Well, that's like combining democracy with plutocracy, that is, ownership by the few. And so if ownership by the few is what's messing up the world and denying people their full rights, I say organize. That's the only way you do it. Study these ideas. See if there's anything wrong. Try to challenge what we put up on our website at www.cesj.org. Free stuff. Look at the videos. Listen to the videos. And so there are different ways to see everything. And I'm saying this is a global library. We call our website a global library. And we got some stuff into Spanish and so on. But all over the world, people are going to be free to join us. And we want to create a new university. Okay, why? Because the other universities are not teaching justice. What do we think is necessary? Justice University.
That's good. So let me go to Leonard. Leonard asked Norm, you know, where do we start? You know, what's the first step? And he gave us, you know, laid out some things for us. What do you see the first step that your organization is taking in terms of building this third way?
Okay. First step is awareness. We have to educate our people on who we are, as far as identity, as far as some of the legal pitfalls and traps that we have that are relegating us to this invisible caste system that we're into. In fact, right now I can tell you we have legislation. I wrote some legislation with the help of some of our members. We have legislation in the state of Kentucky to take color off of any state or federal, well, first of all, state form, okay, and replace it with ethnicity, and our ethnicity would be descendants of America. So if you want to go back, those slaves that were born here in America, and were born into slavery, we don't want to call them Negroes, okay? We don't want to call them Blacks, okay? We don't want to call them the other N-word, okay? These people were American slaves, okay? And it's important that we do this for legal reasons, all right? So that's what we want to do, establish a legal identity first. We want to also get the word out and get people involved in what we're doing, buying into our concepts. Like I said, it's, you know, people will say, well, okay, so how does this how does this benefit me? Okay, well, like I said, if you look at your life and you say, okay, I've got a slave ancestor. In fact, I use my example. Okay, I've got my slave ancestor, and I never even knew this. Being in the military, I've traveled a lot of different places, and the places that I've traveled, I've come to realize that I've had ancestors, slave ancestors, in the states and the places, almost to the city, all right, that I've traveled to, okay? And it's incredible. All right. So here in North Carolina, my slave ancestor, born a slave in 1853, okay, obviously, you know, slavery ended, moved on to Tennessee, became a sharecropper like most slaves. One of the difficulties that I see with trying to trace his records and trying to trace and find out is because he was uneducated, he was illiterate, okay? People had to read and write different things. One of the things he did was he registered to vote, okay, when he could. My slave ancestor registered to vote, registered for selective services when he could, all right? Had 9 children, went on, and so this is where I come from. And I look at here you have a person born in slavery, finally getting freedom, and would not let the fact that they were illiterate stop them from being a part of the American process, okay? This type of motivation is what we need in our community. And this is the story that I have to bring to our people, say, you have a slave ancestor, all right, that endured slavery for you to exist, all right? So we have to get that message out there. Once we kind of get that message, and, you know, cause like I said, we as a people are not as offended by the N-word as we are by the S-word, and the S-word is slavery, okay? Like I said, it's one of the things we have to be clear is we are not still slaves. We are descendants of slaves. A lot of people say, well, you know, what about the African part? We are genetically African, okay? We acknowledge all the great contributions of Africa. We acknowledge the kings, the queens, and all of the great people of Africa. We celebrate them, but that is not why we are here. We are here because a slave or two or three, all right, decided to live and have children in the worst possible environment in world history, okay? So we have to begin to start paying honor to that. And that message has to get out there. Once that message gets out there and we start to get a movement going and we start to get more people involved, in which, like I said, we're upstart, okay? Our organization is growing. I've had some conversations with some people about the very thing that I'm talking about. Had some conversations with some young people, and it's starting to create a buzz, all right, of well, wait a minute, you know. So, you know, the question we ask is, how do we honor our ancestors, okay? So this is the start of that. So some other things that we want to do. We actually, in the state of Kentucky, have a political party. The Citizens of American Slaves is a political party. We are forming a voting block. Now, de facto, pretty much the way we vote, we vote in a de facto block of Democrat, okay? What we want to do is change, radically change the way we vote. We're looking at bringing on some concepts, the voting block, where we're free agents. Many of the places we live, we are not the majority. We are the numerical minority. And I say numerical because I don't want to ever call us a minority group, because that means you're a loser. We are a numerical minority. How do you give power to a numerical minority? It's real simple. There's not a politician anywhere, okay, that would ignore 10, 15, 20% of the population, all right? They could get the complete backing of all of these people. Now you have politicians trying to speak your language, okay? Now you can say, all right, here are the things that we need to have happen in our community. And possibly one of these things could be, hey, listen, you need to get behind the Just Third Way, all right? We want the Capital Homestead Act to be something that comes to fruition, because we want to have ownership, all right? We want to have capital. We want to be able to engage in business, like Dr. Carolyn was saying, is how many of our people historically have not been able to get business loans, okay, through banking systems, because of who we're trying to, you know, target, our target demographic, the ideas we have to come up with a great business plan. Well, yeah, you still have to do these types of things, but if you have something there, like, say, something as simple as a barbershop, a hair salon, a restaurant, a gas station, okay? Something as simple as these things that, you know, a lot of people say, hey, listen, I'm not trying to be, okay, a tech giant. There's millions of things that we could possibly get into economically that this would be able to help. But like I said, step one, raising awareness just of the organization and the concepts of descendants of American slaves and what it is we're trying to do. Create legislation. But like I said, we've got legislation out there that we're trying to push where we're dismantling the idea of color identity. And why is that important? Because color identity is not based upon your skin color. It's based upon a caste system that relegates people in certain levels that they cannot get out of. I'm pretty sure you're aware of the Dred Scott case of 1857. That case right there, was the Supreme Court Justice Roger Taney specifically used the words black. Okay, that any black man, all right, there, matter of fact, he wanted to throw the case out because he felt like we're not citizens. If you declare yourself as a black man, any black person, black man, all right, there's not a law a black man can create that a white man has to honor. Okay, he's speaking in not color as in your skin color, but in terms of black being someone of a slave caste. A slave caste to a master caste. Slave castes are not people who are human beings. They're property. Property does not have rights and cannot enforce laws or enact laws on the owners of the property. All right. So this is kind of a tricky situation because one of the things about that is that the way the justice system works here is it gives you enough rope to hang yourself. So if you admittedly, and this is one of the things, if you admit to being black, then you are admitting to a Supreme Court ruling that has not ever been changed or repealed, all right, ever. So you are admitting I'm of this caste or this class of people who don't have rights, who are not citizens, who no one has to respect, all right, as far as their authority. This is why, you know, we have to operate as Americans, okay? Our ethnic group, our ethnicity would be descendants of American slaves. So, but, you know, getting back to, you know, the importance of, that's why we want to eliminate the color. You get that out of there, okay, now we're operating on the basis of Americans. As Americans, we're protected by the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, First Amendment. Now the U.S. Constitution, as a soldier in the United States Army, I can tell you, I took the oath to protect the U.S. Constitution. Therefore, the U.S. Constitution is what gives me my citizenship, my sovereignty, all right? And these are things that we need to teach our people, all right, so that they may understand, okay? This is why we have to get away from this color, okay? Because color, like I said, is about relegating yourself to a caste. If anyone has ever seen a Hindu caste system, they would know, you know, you see the different colors, and the bottom is the black caste, which are considered the untouchables, the corrupted people. So America has a similar caste system like this. It's not something that has been said. It's just something being enacted. We want to get rid of that. We want to create more legislation to get rid of all of that. And then, like I said, is as we partnership with Dr. Kelvin's organization, we at the same time implement some of these policies, some of these, you know, we implement the just third way, all right, for ourselves to give ourselves economic power. And then, like I say, as we raise up, then you can look at the whole scope of the human element of America. I mean, it makes no sense to build an impenetrable arch and you still are in stormy waters, okay? That's what I say. If the end game is just to quote unquote fix black people, all right? Okay, that's a good end game, but eventually that's going to fall apart because the waters that black people still in are still rough and choppy, all right, which is the waters of America. We have to calm the waters, okay? So fixing us is a priority, but also calming the waters of America. And I think fixing us and calming the waters ends up being kind of the same thing. You know, we end up doing both at one time. So like I said, as Upstart Group, we're getting, you know, things together, membership, websites, all of these types of things going. I'll be still in contact with, you know, heavily involved with the CESJ and Dr. Curlin. So this is where we are. And then hopefully, you know, you can invite us back on and we can tell you some progress in a couple of months. Me, myself, personally, I am in about 90 days, I've got to go and speak at the University of Louisville, all right, on descendants of American slaves and to lay out exactly what we were talking about, you know, to some students. We want to reach our young people. We want to reach our older people. We want to reach our churches. We have lots of resistance. It's amazing how we almost have more resistance within our community than other communities, but that's okay. That's okay. That's not going to deter us because, like I said, is what we want is results. And as things get done and people start to see results happening, some of that stubbornness kind of loosens up. And that's, you know, and one of the results we would like to see definitely is that we have some involvement. You know, we get it to where, you know, our people are benefactors of the Just Third Way within our community.
You know, one of the things that I like is that you're going to be having T-shirts where people can wear. And what's the slogan going to be on that?
It's going to be own or be owned.
I think, believe me, that gets people's attention. And we're talking about a different paradigm, a different system, a way of thinking, and you got to start. And I think you can summarize everything that we've been talking about in those four words: own or be owned. And we say now we think that we can change the money system and the tax system. And I know that we were able to change the tax system to let workers become owners, and it works better than typical companies, if it's done right. There are something like 10 million workers who have benefited, you know? But it's not enough. It's not enough. And I have criticisms of most of the employee stock ownership plans, but some are done right. They have what we would consider to be a governance system and a voting system, so that all the workers would have equal opportunity to become owners, while the chief executive officer would be a different type of person. He'd be what I call a servant leader and teacher. So you see, if you're thinking that way, you're going to be in an organization where everyone, if the leader sees himself as the ultimate servant of the company and somebody who has something to teach others, you'll create a new culture within the company. And finally, who are they serving? The customers. And will they be able to be, will they be more successful? You bet they're going to be more successful because they're going to do everything that the conventional companies do, but even more, because everybody will be a part of a team, all trying to succeed together. See, while, as I said, while the chief executive officer may earn more than somebody who's a janitor, but when it comes to ownership, this is where I want to change the ESOP convention, where they're normally they give a little more to the top people than the bottom people. No, nobody puts up their own money. Then everybody should be able to get the same number of shares each as you pay off the capital credit for the new shares over time. Every year that those shares are released or been paid for, they would be allocated. They'd be spread out to everybody who's working that year.
So everyone, as you can see, these conversations are becoming more and more enticing, fluid, as well as informative. So given that, we have to invite these two guests back. But we certainly are heating this discussion up in terms of possibilities. And certainly we want to see, as Mr. Walker said, we want to see results. How can these two individuals with their respective two organizations create results? And they both said that we need leadership, we need information, we need leadership. And the idea of moving away from color identity to an ethnic identity is getting closer to the real issue, was the issue of people using the principle of self-determination, of naming themselves, defining themselves, and speaking for themselves. And of course, we talk about that with respect to human rights. We have to talk about Emmanuel Bedeli, who created the Republic of New Africa, as well as Yusuf Klai, who talks about international law as it relates to what is called national minorities. That is, a people that are on a land base prior to the formation of a state, and thereby they would have special status either in what is called special measures or what is called special rights. This has to do with standing in terms of having a political status, in terms of being recognized as a full participating party in whatever social contract is drawn up. So I'd like to thank our two guests, Norman Curtin and Leonard Walker. Have them. I would like you to state your web addresses or email addresses, so those listening to this broadcast will be able to be in touch with you. I will start with Leonard.
Yes, I can be reached at lwalkerdasi, DASI100USA.com. That's my email address. Or if you want to call me directly, I can be called. My cell number is 336-209-1024.
Did you give a website?
Website is not up yet. That's what we're working on, is trying to get our website up and going. We should have something within maybe 2 weeks or so. But, yeah, now just get in contact with me, and I can, like I said, as we're building all of that kind of, like I said, we're an upstart. So all of this is being built, yeah.
Very good, very good. And, Norm, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, first let's say what's most important is the website, which is www.cesj.org, stands for Center for Economic and Social Justice .org, but CESJ. You can get me by email. It's thirdway, thirdway, at cesj.org. Or you can call 703-243-5155.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being guests on Race Treaty tonight. Of course, we will have you back, and we'll see how your movement is advancing, see how we can assist each other in terms of creating a better world. So this is Onaji Maweed for Race Treaty, thanking our guests and thanking the listening audience. Stay tuned. Please come back next Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you.
Brother Onaji, let me add one more thing. One more thing is, if anyone wants to, our Facebook page, all right, is Advocacy for American Descendants of Slaves. You can find it, Advocacy of American Descendants of Slaves. That's our Facebook page where we do most of our dialogue and come, you know, with all of our concepts and things.
Okay, thank you so very much, gentlemen. Take care now.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.